the mindless toil of working alone at home trying to perfect anything, doing math homework, your chemistry homework, practicing scales on the piano. For all that, there are also the magical moments of the gentle guidance from a memorable teacher.
Don't let go of this E until it's time to play it. And then it'll sound perfect. Ah. A dream.
That's Seymour Bernstein, 87-year-old teacher of music, who, let's just say, is not a fan of the movie Whiplash. For generations of piano students, Seymour Bernstein says he has been the student, learning always from his pupils, living his art. That idea was something of a holy grail for a troubled, brilliant, successful actor, Ethan Hawke, who found himself seated next to Seymour at a dinner party years ago. A great friendship was born that became a documentary. Seymour, An Introduction, is a love song to art and teaching and music, and will give no one whiplash.
Well, I kind of think that our movie is the photo negative of that movie, that there is a tremendous amount you can get out of people with hostility and rage and torture. You know, that you can draw a lot from a person that, and the real mystery to me is, and much more interesting question is, how to do it without doing that. You know, what Seymour's all about, what the movie is about, his teaching is about drawing the best from ourselves and being in control and having agency of our own art, not being manipulated and abused.
How were you drawn together, Seymour? Describe the event that brought you guys together.
Well, I have a pupil who is a friend of Ethan's. And one night he called me and said, I'd like you to come to dinner. Ethan Hawke is going to be there, and the spiritual leader, Andrew Harvey. And you know what I said? Who is Ethan Hawke?
You know, I was going to ask if you were going to say that. But
yeah, I had to Google him. Yeah. And when I did, I said, oh, my God. And that's how I met him.
Now, I happen to follow the movies enough to know that Ethan Hawke does not make a film about everyone he has dinner with. What did you think about this project when he proposed it to you?
Well, I was dumbstruck at first. My first feeling was, why does he want to make a documentary on the likes of me? I'm not so special. That's what I thought at first. But then I realized in discussion with Ethan, and he told me straight out, what I want to promote in this movie is a sense of what happens to us when we have a passion for an art form and we follow it through, and what effect does that have on our lives, not only on the art form. And, you know, that's the core of how I live.
What did you find when you started speaking with Seymour?
I found a deeply compassionate person. I was turning 40, and I was really trying to look at what a life in the arts means. And there's so few role models we have of people that you can really look to who have dedicated their life to this. And seem happy and seem like they have a lot to offer, and that don't, you know, bitterness is a demon in the woods of all the arts, and disappointment and even some of the most successful people I've met eroded at bitterness about what they're not. So if it happens to them, what's going to happen to me? And I saw somebody that had a tremendous amount of joy in their life, and we just got along. And I find all the chapters of your life, Seymour, incredibly interesting. And I think what I envied in piano playing, there's a long history of mentorship. There's a pupil and a mentor. And that goes deep into your life, as opposed to in much of our culture, there's this idea that you're supposed to be done with your apprenticeship at 16, 17, 18, maybe.
And go off and be a hotshot.
And then you're supposed to be somebody fabulous. And yet we have no maps of how to continue our development when we're 40.
Interestingly, my teacher, Clifford Curzon, he used to come here every 2 years. He was in his 70s, and I was in my 40s. And he would play for me, and at first he wouldn't say anything. I would accompany his concerti on another piano, because he had to play it that night. And we would meet every night in the basement of Steinway. And one day, he stopped after playing a phrase, and he said to me, "Laddie, what did you think of that?" And I thought he was just patronizing me. But he wasn't. He wanted to be a pupil, and he wanted my opinion of how he played. Well, that started once, and then it continued for 20 years. So, for example, he was going to appear in Carnegie Hall with Daniel Barenboim conducting a Mozart concerto, and he told me to appear at a certain time, and he took me up in a box, put the score in my lap, and gave me a pen and said, "I want you to write down everything that occurs to you during the rehearsal. Then there was a break. The orchestra vanished. He brought me up on the stage, said, "Now tell me everything you thought." Well, do you know, whatever I did think and discuss with him, he did that night at the recital. So he remained a pupil for the rest of his life.
What a gift. What a gift.
Do you know who my mentors are now? My pupils.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the Talmud, on the first page of the Talmud, it says, "From my pupils have I learned." I learn more from my pupils than I did from my teachers now.
Do you play, Ethan?
No. But I find all the arts are so similar. Listening to Seymour talk about complex pieces of music relates so much to breaking down a Shakespeare monologue. I see the parallels so much. I mean, it's even listening to you talk. I remember at the end of his life, Paul Newman had an amazing interview where he was expressing his gratitude to Scorsese because finally somebody was directing him again. It had been years, he realized, since
he became a pupil again.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And how much our brains yearn to be better, and to not be so alone with the responsibility. You know, and to have a measuring stick by which to work towards. And when you're young, you get that. And as you get older, it's like we're just kind of released into the sea, and it's difficult to find that.
Well, you have to be very careful who becomes your mentor.
Yeah.
Because there are, after all, monster teachers.
Well, that's like what Whiplash is about. And
yeah.
What you said, it's funny, you know, this whole boyhood experience that I've been on, and I've been working with this young man, Eller Coltrane, for years. And watching him kind of reach adulthood, I have been learning so much from him. I never thought about it because I've kind of taken on the hat of being a mentor to him, right? I'm an older actor, and I'm walking him through this gauntlet of the Oscars and publicity and all this kind of very treacherous water. But I realize that his idealism has been teaching me and keeping me focused throughout.
Did you coach him during the film?
Well, I tried to, but the funny thing is now that I think back and I listen to what you're saying, I realize I think he probably helped me more than I helped
him. How interesting.
You know,
that's interesting.
Working with him on what he should say, you know,
yeah.
helped me think about what I wanted to say. And just asking him simple questions. Well, Eller, what do you believe in? What do you want to put out there? You're going to be interviewed by 60 Minutes? What do you want to say? Well, let's work on it. But nobody ever asked me that anymore, but now it helped me a lot. I hadn't thought of it.
Ethan, in your work, there's such a sense of authenticity and rawness in the moments that you go for. Did you have such a moment in filming this, a real honest, surprising, authentic moment that came out?
I would venture to say the entire experience. I really did never want to make a documentary. I had no aspirations as a documentarian. I I felt I'd never heard anyone speak about integrating their development as a working craftsman with their development as a human being. That if you could actually integrate your work, you know, so often men, women, they go to the office and they pour themselves in their job and they're, and they come home and they're kind of half asleep through their family life. Or some people are passionate about their family life and half asleep through their working life, you know? And the beautiful thing about the arts is, not to be corny about it, but at its best, it can have a similar relationship to that of a spiritual tradition, meaning that what makes your art relevant and vibrant is something that's happening inside of you, you know? When Marlon Brando is on the waterfront, he's sharing something deeply personal to him and to his friend Elia Kazan, and they're putting that on the celluloid, and you pay money and you see it, and you're... there's some blood in there. There's something real when you see a Picasso painting. You know, I mean, all this stuff. When you hear a Beatles record, I mean, it's all the stuff of their life. And so if you could integrate your development as a human being to positive ends, both in your art and your life, so that being a better actor made me a better husband, you know, what if you could do that? What if being a better actor would make me a better father? And I felt instinctually that there is a connection there. But I never heard anybody say it. In fact, young people are often kind of given this talent myth that to be talented is permission to be a drug-abusing, sure, self-centered, yeah, narcissist, right? And so Seymour was kind of showing me a path, an alternate path.
I've observed, I know Ethan now for almost 3 years, and I have observed amazing changes in him. There is no longer any question about his identity. I have a feeling he knows his identity, that the actor and the person are one and the same. They're not separated. So it works this way, very similarly to all the arts work this way. Let's say it, they should work this way.
See, Seymour, do you charge by the hour?
Pardon me?
Do you charge by the hour?
By the hour and a half.
I see.
It takes an hour and a half for a lesson. It works this
lesson,
way.
Lesson, therapy, you know.
Look here, he's working on a Shakespeare play, right? Macbeth. Well, that entails his emotional world, his intellectual world, and his physical world, right? Can't separate the two. They have to be integrated in order for him to give a succinct performance. I'm working on a Beethoven sonata. That entails my emotional world, my intellectual world, and my physical world, right? Well, let's say that you learn to integrate it in your art form. Isn't it foolish to walk away from your art form into your social world and leave that integration behind? This is when artists get into serious trouble, so that the art form and the social world are two separate parts. My teacher, Clifford Curzon, was a total wreck of a person. And when I discussed this with him, he said, "Isn't that strange? I go out of my way to keep my art uncontaminated from my social world." So with him, the musician was one person, and his social world was another person. He wasn't integrated. So I've noticed this guy. I've watched him for 3 years now. He's harmonized now.
Well,
he's quite different.
I got to get all your albums, Yoda. Yeah, I'm telling
yeah.
you.
You know, you bring up in one of my favorite moments where I learned about acting was at a Willie Nelson concert, right? I'd been, through a friend of a friend, I'd been given some really good seats. And in my particular box they had, I could kind of see backstage. I saw through the curtain, and I saw him back there, and he was chatting with the other musicians, and he was completely relaxed, right? And I watched him walk from backstage onto stage with no change, no shift in his energy at all. And almost every, I've spent my life going backstage, and you know, you normally get to somebody's dressing room and it's pulsing and vibrating with this weird energy, and you're backstage and you watch their, it's almost like their skin ripples when they walk on stage. Something shifts. Their whole energy makeup changes. But not with Willie Nelson. The same guy. And I went backstage, got invited, and there was no nervous anxiety backstage. None. And I realized, oh, this is what I want. It is a goal of mine. And this integrity of self is a worthy pursuit, I think.
Well, what a great conversation. Willie, Ethan, Seymour, Stoppard, we went everywhere. Thanks, guys, so much, and we really will look forward to this.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on your show.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.